From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 376, recorded live Thursday, June 13th, 2013. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, makers of GesturePad, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Raquel Velez about Node.js.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'm here in Portland, Oregon at the Oregon Convention Center at the jQuery Conference. Talking with Raquel Velez. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
You're doing a talk tomorrow on Node.
Yes, I am. I'm talking about front-end development, specifically in Node.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing this at the jQuery conference. Now, I just figured this would be a conference all about like the dollar sign, and then that would be it. We just dollar sign, and then that would be talks and talks and talks about that.
Yeah, I know. It seems a little weird. But actually, I think because of the evolution of the language, as people start to realize that front-end development is not just about jQuery, even though, 90% of developers use jQuery on the front end, there's so many more options out there now. It's so many opportunities to kind of move past that, move with that, use it in other applications. And so when I saw the call for speakers, I said, okay, let me try putting something in about front-end development in Node, because a lot of people are a little scared of this, you know, crazy server-side JavaScript thing, and I want to relieve those fears.
Yeah, people, for some reason in development, seem to fall into the I segment myself in that I'm a SQL programmer and or I'm a Fox Pro or whatever, like tiny tool. They just pick a tool and they stay in their lane. And then there's front end and Node. I know of people who call themselves front end developers, but it blurs a little bit when you start talking about Node development.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what happens when you have JavaScript on the front end and the back end. It's suddenly this opportunity, like there's this door that is opened. All these people who have just been used to writing JavaScript on the client side, now they can suddenly start playing around with it on the server side, and that just kind of blows their minds. They don't have to wait for the Ruby guy, the .NET guy, or whoever to take care of the backend stuff for them. Now they can just jump in themselves.
Yeah, that separation of concerns / separation of responsibilities. When I was working in the enterprise like 10 years ago, I was always waiting for a stored prod from the database guys in another part of the building. Or,
right.
You know, got to wait for the database guy to return the data to the .NET guy, who will then return the data to me.
Right,
and then
exactly.
I'll bring it in with jQuery or whatever.
Right.
How do you think that people find themselves in a Node? Do you think that they explicitly make this leap? Like there's a moment where they go, all right, I'm doing it. I'm going on server side. Or does it just happen?
Well, so I think what happens is I think there's multiple camps of people. I think there are the people who are like, oh, there's this new shiny language. Let me go play with it. But then there's also people who are like, oh, I love JavaScript and now I can do this on the back end. Let me try that. And then I think there's also people who they find out that it is just so easy to get started with Node, that they have a personal project or something, and it's like, well, it's just a couple of pages of an app. You know, how do I get started? And then they see how easy it is to just start up an Express server and then just start hacking away with Jade and Stylus and picking out the routes and everything like that. That they're just like, oh, well, that doesn't look so hard. Let me try that. Mm-hmm. And so I think it really depends on kind of what your angle is. But we've just seen this community grow a millionfold in the last couple of years. So,
Well, let's pick apart some of those words that you use, like Stylus and Jade and Express servers. And the idea that what is it about Node that makes it easier to pick up or appears to make it easier to pick up than Java or C++ or .NET. I realize that in those worlds, there's a compilation step.
Mm-hmm.
There's always this implication that there's an IDE required.
Right. No, with Node, I mean, with JavaScript in general, there really isn't an IDE necessarily. You don't use Visual Studio. you use Vim or Emacs or Sublime Text or Brackets is the new one from Adobe, whatever you like. It's not compiled. It's, you know, at least on the front end, people are just using, they're used to just having it kind of load and, you know, press refresh to try something new. You don't have to build
it. Do you think that's it? Is it the press refresh to try something new, both server and client, that makes it so accessible to people?
I think so. I think, I mean, you don't have to sit there waiting for anything to compile ever, and you see errors immediately, and it's pretty good. Debugging is not my favorite.
Just my question. Even without interactive debugging, like, yeah. Say what you will about Visual Studio, but I mean, you really know what's going on.
I will stand by the fact that Visual Studio is Microsoft's best product. I used to write C++, and I love it.
But
to be fair, you can actually do debugging, and you can have interactive breakpoints and everything. You can step into functions and step through functions using, for example, Chrome DevTools. Mm-hmm. So you can do things like that, and that's not too hard at all.
So wait a second. You can use Chrome DevTools on the server side?
You can, actually. I don't do it too much, but you can. There's also a command line version of debugger, so you can put in a breakpoint mm-hmm. in your Node server-side code and then see it kind of break in your like in your console.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to make a Node application, I have either an app.js or a server.js file mm-hmm. that's sitting in a folder somewhere, and that's mm-hmm. all I need, right?
That's all you need.
And I type Node in that folder, mm-hmm. and it fires up Node and starts listening on port 5000 or whatever.
Sure.
So there was no Apache or anything. I have a little tiny development server sitting right there.
That's right.
And is it app.js or server.js? Which is the convention now?
Right now, I think right now it's app.js. Okay. It may have previously been server.js. I think it goes back and forth. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any particular convention. I mean, you could call it example.js if you wanted to.
Right. And it uses the V8 engine, and this is the exact same JavaScript engine that's inside of the Chrome browser.
That's correct.
Right. Isn't that kind of a hack? I mean, I'm now in no way trying to disparage Node, but I really want to understand to both myself and also to people that are listening how this happened. I mean, somebody, Ryan, stuck, like ripped this part of Chrome out that he liked and fired it up inside a console app.
Right.
And it worked. And he said, oh, goodness. And it just started running
right
down the street with this.
Right. Well, I think it's important to first say that, you know, the beauty of V8 is that it's got these C++ bindings, but you can kind of use JavaScript on top of that, right? Mm-hmm. So it's this fancy little, it's super fast and really efficient. And you can basically, you've got this whole event loop and things and real time is the name of the game, right? Like that's the beauty of Node. Why do it on the server side? Honestly, I don't really know. I see no reason. I think the question is more not why, but why not? Hmm. And it's really, I think the notion is being able to use JavaScript on both sides of the stack mm-hmm. and to just kind of run with that. It's not necessarily better or worse, but I mean, but the implications, the consequences of all of that is that you do have this opportunity to have really fast, really high concurrency applications mm-hmm. That have just totally taken over. I mean, nowadays, if you want a chat server, you use Node. Like, it's just so much easier. It's fast, and mm-hmm. you can have multiple people touching the app at the same time, and you don't have to worry about anything.
In the .NET world, we had some really neat stuff happening 10 years ago with web forms and brought a new generation of desktop programmer into a world where they could drag buttons onto a design surface and suddenly they were writing web applications. And I think .NET people are struggling right now to make this transition where a web application that served primarily HTML mm-hmm. is not really serving HTML anymore. It's not creating, like, for-each-ing over data, mm-hmm. generating a table, and then mm-hmm. sending that table over the wire.
Right.
They're sending JavaScript over the wire.
Right.
Does a Node app serve HTML?
Well, so sort of, in the sense that, so like I said, we have Express and Jade and Stylus. And just for the sake of the listeners, let's explain what those are. So Express is an MVC framework. So you have a models, views, and controllers so that you can kind of organize your code in a way that allows you to take data from your database. So that's your model kind of side. And then you've got your views, which basically handle all of your front end. So your your HTML, your CSS, your front-end JavaScript, and then you have your controllers that basically allow the data to talk between the two, mm-hmm. and account for routing and all of that good
and
stuff.
And Express is not just the framework, but a series of conventions, like what goes where?
Sure. I mean, it's basically just a bunch of files, really. It's a bunch of folders that you can kind of... to me, it's more of an organizer of your code.
Right.
But yes, there are some conventions, but it uses Node conventions. So you don't have to use Express. You could use Flatiron, or you could use something completely different, like a Shepherd or something.
You guys have such cool names.
I know.
It's like pickanoun.js. I always
pretty
talk
much.
About that. I was like, I was making a joke on stage once, and I was like, you could just say lawnchair.js. And someone was like, that's a thing. Like, oh, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of hilarious. But anyway, so Express is just one of many examples of a model view controller option. And then Jade and Stylus. So Jade is an HTML templating, you can call it an HTML preprocessor, and the language. And then Stylus is a CSS preprocessor as well. So if you're familiar with Less or Sass, Stylus is kind of the Jade or the... It's the Node version of that.
So I know Less. Does Stylus process Less files?
No, it's different. Okay. So the
syntax
is different.
So it is neither Less nor Sass.
It is neither Less nor Sass, but it is in the same camp.
Okay.
So it's a cousin.
Okay, cool. That's cool. So Jade is the preprocessor
for HTML.
HTML.
Yep.
Stylus is the preprocessor for CSS.
Correct.
The organizer and the convention, the file cabinet of it all is Express.
Right.
That imposes some kind of model view controller pattern.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Correct.
And then am I serving out like an index.html?
Yes, that's exactly right. So what happens is, at least using Express, you have this route that's just like, for example, your index. Mm-hmm. And then you can say, well, whenever somebody hits the index, go to this controller function. And in the controller function, you'll have a response notion that says, on response, render this file, which in our case will be in Jade, but let's pass in this information, this data that we may have from the back end, from a model or something like that.
Okay.
And then we can take that data and we can basically kind of put it into our HTML template with Jade.
Okay.
And so we can, we'll have all of that stuff in our Jade template, and then it basically compiles to HTML. So yeah, it serves HTML, and then of course, in addition, it has the stylus, the styling of that HTML template.
So do Node people sweat the idea of a model versus a view model? Like, you know, you might get the model from the database and then change it or project it onto a different, more complicated object that represents a more complicated view, and then pass that view into Jade?
Yeah, no, that's, I probably wouldn't put it into Jade. I would put whatever data you need to put into Jade, and then within Jade and your client-side scripting. So if you wanted to use, say, Knockout or something like that, or Backbone, you do that more on the client side than on the back end.
Mm-hmm. So on the .NET side, the people who are doing not JavaScript heavy or not a lot of JavaScript in the client, mostly, you know, take some data, pass it into a view and generate HTML and send it across the wire and then rinse and repeat. So for them, model view controller is very much a server-side thing.
Right.
I think it gets confusing in the Node world because it is also a front-end developer's world. There's there's two model view controllers.
Right, right. And you can kind of set it up that way. Certainly, so you have your model view controller. So I guess to be a little bit more accurate or clarify, you set up all of you use Jade on the back end and you set it all up on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what goes over the wire is HTML.
So like on, let's say that initial load, we show up, we're at index.html, HTML came across the wire, and the only JavaScript involved initially in our example happened on the server.
Yes.
But then let's say I start sorting and paging and moving through this table of maybe infinite length.
Sure.
Let's say I'm going to do one of those infinite scroll deals.
Okay.
So now I've got a JavaScript event that's going to happen on the client that's going to notice that I'm scrolling.
Right.
Now I'm going to use JavaScript to make a call back to Node.
Right.
To a different controller to get more data?
Yeah, exactly. So you can basically have a new route that you can just Ajax to, for example.
Okay.
So yeah, all of that is happening at different... So it's important... As wonderful as it is to do JavaScript on the front and the back, it is important to mentally separate the front end from the back end so they don't crisscross the wires too much.
Mm-hmm. Now, but is it, do I want to share code? Like, is that an attractive thing in Node? Like, I'm using JavaScript on both ends. Should I have the same model on client and server?
Sure, absolutely. You can absolutely do that.
Okay, so that brings up an interesting point. Let's say that we're kind of using our little trite example. Let's say that we're turning a list of people. Like, okay. It's a Yellow Pages. So I've got an object in JavaScript that represents people, first name and last name and age and things like that. So very first time someone hits the page, it could be a user, it could be the Googlebot. So I definitely need HTML to get returned.
Absolutely.
I do my template matching and I do my route matching and I generate HTML and I serve HTML.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm on the client side.
Correct.
Doing client-side things, paging. Maybe I scroll down with my infinite scroll. I see an event. I call back with Ajax and I say, go give me more people.
Right.
I'm thinking about people on the client and on the server. Now rather than it calling Jade,
mm-hmm.
can I just go to the model, grab a bunch of people, put them in an array?
Yeah,
and absolutely. And just go flying across as JSON now.
Yes, now it's JSON. And in this particular case, though, because you're not changing the HTML from the templating side of things, mm-hmm. it's going to have to stay all on the client side. So you'd probably use, say, jQuery or Backbone or something mm-hmm. that will allow you to modify the DOM as you go along.
Okay. So then I bring that list of people across the wire. Mm-hmm. And there's no real deserialization point. I mean, it's just JSON at that point.
Right. Absolutely. JSON is our data model, if you want to think of it that way. Like, it is the crux of, it's our data structure. Mm-hmm. It's the crux of all data going back and forth. We don't really use XML very much. We don't really use, most of the other options. We just stick with JSON mm-hmm. as much as possible because it's a JavaScript object.
Right. It's kind of funny, but it's running code. We're like literally, we're blurring the line between the bytecode that is JavaScript and data.
Right. Absolutely. But it's beautiful because you don't have to actually do anything to the object. You can just leave the object as it is and just read from it.
Right.
So.
Yeah, there's no impedance mismatch. I mean, I'm constantly trying to deserialize things and serialize things and move mm-hmm. back and forth. And that's what was no fun about XML.
Right.
No matter what language you used to read from it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So then I would take that on the client. I might have a model view control. I might have Angular or Ember or whatever.
Sure.
To then extend that table so that my first load returned HTML and my subsequent interactions might be JavaScript.
Right.
So then on the client side, I have a controller that might be making those JSON calls.
Sure. Right. So, I mean, what you could do is you could either have a client-side controller, i.e. via Backbone or something like that, or you could just use Ajax mm-hmm. and just call back to your server-side application and have that controller take care of mm-hmm. stuff.
As someone who is thinking about getting involved in this or learning about it, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners are interested in this, there seems to be such an intensity of feeling around how to properly structure things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unclear from the uninitiated, mm-hmm. I'll point to myself as well, being an uninitiated person, that there are lots of people who speak with these declarative statements, right?
Yes.
Thou shalt do their stuff like this.
Absolutely.
And then there's people who are a little bit more like, we really haven't figured it out yet. And mm-hmm. we're just making declarative statements to see if it will stick.
Right.
Is there a right way to make an app yet on the client? Are we just still putting noun.js together to figure out what feels right?
Yeah, I think there are some conventions, but I mean, the web is constantly changing. There's no way that I would ever say, this is how you do it, mm-hmm. and we're not going to talk about it anymore because this is how we do it. And I would never say that.
Mm-hmm.
Things are changing all the time. If you talk to somebody, you know, a year ago, they would have said single page apps. Why would you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You
know? So it is a religious argument. It's never going to get solved, as with all
absolutely.
Religious arguments.
It's the same thing as tabs versus spaces or semicolons or not semicolons or, you know, where do you put your opening curly brace? There are conventions. There are some generally accepted things, but there are also so many arguments one way or the other mm-hmm. that I don't think it really matters.
So you're not you don't fall in the religious zealot.
I really don't. I'm the type of person who uses things the way I feel like it. I mean, I currently do hardware hacking with Node. I build robots, so which is something that nobody ever does.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So you had mentioned the idea that there are C++ bindings, V8, and how, you know, when I think of JavaScript, I'm still kind of old school in that I think of this high-level interpreted language, and I forget mm-hmm. that we're talking about serious, jitted, almost as if JavaScript were close to the metal.
Right.
Like C or C++.
Absolutely. But I think it's really important to recognize that JavaScript is not a classical language. So when people come to JavaScript from C++ or even Python or C, they expect there to be these classes, and then you have private and protected and public and all these other things. JavaScript doesn't really have that. JavaScript is a functional language. And so it's...
Well, it's not functional like Haskell, is it, or OCaml? When you say classical, I think you're meaning classically object-oriented?
No. So JavaScript is definitely object-oriented. When I say classical, I say things more like classes. So you have this class. And JavaScript kind of does things like that with its prototypes.
I would think that it's not a classically object-oriented language in that it doesn't have the kind of visibility scoping and mm-hmm. an object hierarchy.
Sure.
I would think of it as a pretty straightforward prototypical language.
Right. Well, yeah, so it's definitely prototypical. But the reason I call it functional mm-hmm. is that it's more like Scheme than it is like Java.
Mm.
Right?
Okay.
So Brendan Eich, I heard him give a talk a couple weeks ago. He said, they told me that it needs to look like Java, but it needs to act like Scheme. And I was like, that's a really interesting way of thinking mm-hmm. about it. And
okay, so explain that to people who may not be familiar with Scheme or may not have played with that in school.
Sure. So Scheme is... So basically, take all notions of
forget everything you've learned in the last 20 years.
Forget everything. and start all over. So if you're familiar with Lisp, Scheme and Lisp are friends. It's this idea that you can pass functions into other functions, mm-hmm. right?
Without any impedance. Like,
right.
It's not a big deal. Like in C++, it's like pointers to pointers to things.
Exactly. There are no pointers in JavaScript.
No big deal to pass a function to
right.
a function.
And passing by reference is just kind of default. So JavaScript is special because you can one of your parameters can be a function, and you can return a function from a function.
Hmm.
So, which,
like, you could actually even create a function.
You can create a function from within a function.
Yeah.
And so it's weird, right?
Well, I think it brings up a point that you can't just drop into JavaScript after 10 or 15 years of doing C++ or C#. And expect to have the idioms
right.
and the patterns in your head just ready and available. Because if you try to write it as if it were C...
Oh, and believe me, I've tried doing that, and it's ugly.
it will hurt, right?
Yeah.
So you have to think to yourself, gosh, it's just not intuitive to me to
right.
pass in functions.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest, kind of the easiest way to think about that is when you start talking about asynchronicity in JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
So this notion that, whenever I did C++, it was very synchronous. So if A, then, so like, you know, line one goes, and then line two goes, and then line three goes.
Right,
and then,
extremely procedural
right,
and very
it's extremely
clear.
Procedural. Yeah. Right. But because of the single stream or the single threaded nature of JavaScript, it doesn't work that way. You don't send off a command and then wait for it to come back before the next one goes. You just start sending them back. And then when a function finishes, it'll come back.
Mm-hmm. And it'll call you back?
Right. So what we do is we actually have this notion of callbacks, right? So in C++, when you have a function, you return like a variable or like a Boolean or an int or mm-hmm. something like that,
yeah,
unless it's
concrete.
A void, right?
Sure.
But in JavaScript, if when you're ready for... you want the, when you send an instruction off to the server, then you are notified that it is done by using a callback.
Mm-hmm.
And what a callback is it's generally an anonymous function
mm-hmm.
that executes after the one has finished executing.
Okay,
that makes
so
any sense.
You're basically getting a promise that I'll call you back when
exactly.
I'm done. And then you're free to do whatever you want to.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
So But it's a little weird because you're sending this function through this other function to know when the first function is done.
Right.
And that's really confusing, mm-hmm. especially for folks who are used to things being very serialized.
Yeah, exactly.
So especially if you're used to multi-threads, threading is gone. Like, well, say goodbye thread.
This is where I have so much trouble when I'm thinking about things on the client side, because there's feels like there's so much more maintenance of state. I'm building mm-hmm. these state machines on the client side, and I'm inevitably getting things out of sync.
Right.
And if I look at really complicated apps like Gmail or Trello that are just like big JavaScript apps, and I'm like, how are they keeping it all together? Like, somehow I just imagine it, the way I would phrase it is that I imagine the state just degrading over time and then just declaring state bankruptcy and hitting F5 and starting from scratch. You know what I mean? I just don't see how an app like that could run for so long without something getting out of sync.
Right.
And then just giving up.
Right. And the way that we do that is through callbacks and basically coming back to center. So we have this notion in robotics where if you're just doing dead reckoning, and what that means is, let's say you're counting, like if you close your eyes and you try and walk in a straight line, mm-hmm. right? It's really hard because especially if you're right dominant. So like if you write with your right hand, mm-hmm. you probably also have more emphasis on your right foot. Mm-hmm. So if you close your eyes and you try to walk in a straight line, you will kind of veer to the right a little bit.
Yeah, you have no reference point.
Right. Or to the left, I guess. But then if you reach out and touch a wall, right, and you know that you're supposed to be arm's length from the wall, then you can correct yourself.
Oh, and then your perception of where you are completely resets. Like when you're right. walking at night with your eyes closed, and then you're like, oh, I'm not where I thought I was.
Exactly.
And well, now I am where I thought I was.
Exactly. Yeah. So you correct yourself. So you can still keep your eyes closed, but if you use some external information, you can find yourself back to where you need to be.
Okay.
So we use callbacks to kind of do that same exact thing. We veer off, we send instructions out, and then we wait for them to come back. Mm-hmm. And then once they come back, okay, now we're still on our same course.
Okay. And then that is we bring our state machine back to a known state, a known good state.
Exactly.
Which is effectively refreshing and returning to a known state.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense. Interesting. So you're thinking that people on the front end find themselves in JavaScript just because the lure of, well, I'm already writing JavaScript on the client.
Right.
I might as well just do a little work.
Yeah.
On the server.
Right. Exactly.
Do you think that that brings a new kind of person to the server side? As if maybe, for lack of being a little bit of a prejudiced, snooty person, like the non-computer science people, the non-software engineering, maybe the English majors. Do we really want the English majors on the server side?
We want the English majors. Absolutely. One of my favorite people in the entire world, who is easily one of the best JavaScript developers I've ever met. She's an English major, but it really does open up the doors to people who don't necessarily think the same way, who don't necessarily see things the same way, but can absolutely contribute in a very meaningful way.
Mm-hmm. I'm imagining trying to think about like what this means to my .NET friends and my .NET people who rely not just on the IDE, although they could certainly do their work in Sublime, but also things like IntelliSense. Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself when you're starting out just making all sorts of syntax errors and mistakes?
Absolutely.
F5 never works.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really easy to, especially if you have if you're slightly dyslexic and you keep changing a couple of letters in your variable names, I mean, that just messes a person up. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, the error catching is really quite good in JavaScript. And so they'll be like, line mm-hmm. such and such, that's no bueno, you know, so.
Are there people who need that initial unit test? I like to say that compilation is the first unit test. Some people have suggested like running JSLint
right
before you hit F5.
Absolutely.
Things like that.
Yeah, and you can certainly run JSLint. I personally use Sublime Text. For a little while, I had a linter that would just constantly be running through my code. So every time I pressed save, it would run through and it would highlight, hey, you forgot a semicolon here, or you have never, this variable doesn't exist elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And you realize, oh, I misspelled something or whatever. So that's kind of like a nice mm-hmm. pre F5.
Yeah, a little compilation step there. But did you say that you used to do that? You don't do it anymore.
Right. I don't do it anymore because I found it to be a little bit of a crutch. And so I felt like I needed to level up. And so I wanted to, so I turned it off so that if I did make errors, I would see the error message and then I would have to figure out why the error message came out. And I actually have found that I've become a better coder because of it.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of debate amongst the Visual Studio crowd that, you know, is IntelliSense a crutch? Does it rot the brain? I think that you can get really into declarative statements when you start talking like that.
Sure.
But at the same time, though, you know, I remember when I was working at Nike maybe 15 years ago, and it was like a big black and white X, you know, X terminal, 30-inch X terminal kind of thing, giant monitors, big CRTs, right?
Right.
Green screen, VI, and a giant 1,000-page book of Java.
Right.
No help. You know, and a compile took 10 minutes.
Right, absolutely.
So, you know, I realize that people who are listening who may be older than I have those tales of, like, you know, 30-minute compiles.
Right, right.
But, you know, I wonder, you had JS Lint running when you hit save. I've heard of people having things like auto test going all the time.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and especially so... you can also, as you're pushing things up to the server, you can have, you know, continuous integration that will basically run all of your tests. I'm very much a pro test-driven development type person. Mm-hmm. So every time you push to production, it makes sure that everything works. And you run, if you've ever heard of Grunt, it's a command line tool that allows you to automate all the things.
Okay.
And so with Grunt, you can actually automate your tests or automate linters and things like that so that before you press F5, all of those things get run.
What do you recommend people use for unit tests? If I was going to graduate from Hello World to Hello World with tests,
right?
What should I have? I should have Node, I should have NPM, I should have an editor, and I should have what else?
I would recommend Mocha. Mocha to me is just a beautiful JavaScript testing language. It's really intuitive, especially if you understand if you're comfortable with JavaScript. Comfortable really being a light term. Like you don't even have to be. You don't have to be like on a scale of total noob to Brendan Eich, you know, level 9. Like it's you can be a level 4. Just be comfortable with jQuery.
I like your uses and, of levels. I'm going to give you +2 charisma just for your usage of leveling.
Thank you. So yeah, if you're a jQuery is good enough, you'll like Mocha.
Very cool.
So
Raquel Velez, thanks so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. This is fun.
We'll put links to Raquel on Twitter and her website, and hopefully perhaps links to your slides and information about your talk here at the jQuery conference.
That'd be fantastic.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.